The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
This song is all too familiar. If you're new to the program, I play it every time there's a mass shooting, which is way too often. Actually, I put together another little song today. It'll probably get me copyright violated by YouTube, but it's worth it. I apologize for the assault coming on your ears, but there is a direct correlation to be drawn here between the shooting in New Zealand and Donald fucking Trump.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
You've got to be taught to hate and fear. You've got to be taught from year to year. It's got to be drummed in your dear little ear. You've got to be carefully taught.
Mr. Trump stated, without looking at the various polling data, it's obvious to anybody the hatred is beyond comprehension. Of such a big portion.
You've got to be taught to be afraid of people whose eyes are oddly made and people whose skin is a different shade. You've got to be carefully taught.
Where the hatred comes from and why, we will have to determine. We're going to have to figure it out. We have to figure it out. We can't live like
this. It comes from you, you fucking moron.
It's going to get worse and worse. You're going to have more World Trade Centers. It's going to get worse and worse, folks. We can be politically correct and we can be stupid, but it's going to get worse and worse.
You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you are 6 or 7 or 8, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be carefully taught.
Yes, our chief export in the United States, I guess this is what Donald Trump has been aiming at. Our chief export is guns, is bigotry, is racism, is anti-Muslim sentiment, because the president, the resident of the White House, vilifies Muslims at every turn. We have a Muslim ban in this country because of Donald Trump. And are you surprised that the shooter in New Zealand cited Donald Trump in his manifesto? This is really sickening, and I honestly don't know what to say. There's a group called the Gun Violence Archive. They're on Twitter at Gun Deaths, and yesterday afternoon or last night they tweeted real time U.S. gun violence data for the year as of March 14th. 2,695 gun deaths. This is in the U.S. only. 2,695 gun deaths, 4,632 gun injuries, 101 children shot, 437 teenagers shot, 352 armed home invasions, 242 incidents of defensive gun use, 287 unintentional shootings, 55 mass shootings. Again, that's U.S. gun violence data for the year, just as of March 14th. Now, one day later, today, they tweeted out, since we tweeted this 24 hours ago, the Gun Violence Archive researchers have added to our database, in 24 hours, an additional 47 gun deaths, an additional 79 gun injuries, 3 more children killed or injured, 6 more teenagers killed or injured, 2 more armed home invasions, 4 more incidents of defensive gun use, and 5 more unintentional shootings just in the last 24 hours. And those numbers don't include suicides, because of the way suicides are reported with limitations and restrictions, the 22,000 annual suicides are not included in their daily summary reports. So they came up with a number, 4,370 suicides by gun. That number is an estimate, with today being the 73rd day of the year. We have a problem in this country. The newly elected Democratic majority in the House of Representatives has actually moved legislation, the first in over a decade, to strengthen background checks, to strengthen some sort of controls on the epidemic of guns. And yes, I refer to guns as a problem. It's an epidemic of guns in this country that shouldn't be. And so the House Democrats have done more to stop the madness than has been done in over a decade, probably closer to 20 years or more. But it's not enough. We need to make them act on this. Now, Donald Trump's initial response to this attack in Christchurch not only failed to mention Muslims, Islam, Islamophobia, white supremacy, racism, hatred, or bigotry that targets people based on religion. No, here's how he reacted. First, last night, he tweeted a link to Breitbart, as if they're the go-to authority on right-wing white supremacy, extremism, and the mass murder committed in its name in New Zealand. He finally took that tweet down. And then he tweeted my warmest sympathy and best wishes goes out to the people of New Zealand after the horrible massacre in the mosques. Mosques capitalized. The man is a fucking moron. My warmest sympathy and best wishes? You say best wishes to people getting married. My warmest sympathy? What is wrong with this man? He has no empathy. He has no, oh my God, he's sickening. This type of shocking terror attack, by the way, is almost unheard of in New Zealand. It's one of the world's safest countries. And yet this happened. I'm just sickened. The man, the shooter here, whose name I will not mention, he appears to have been motivated by white supremacy and extremism that he saw in the United States. It is our chief export. It's hatred. It's this white supremacy. It's this ugliness that is festering mostly in the Republican Party. I won't say all of these anti-Muslim bigots and haters and racists are Republicans. Well, let me put that another way. I won't say all Republicans are anti-Muslim bigots and haters. But I would say, and I feel pretty confident in saying it, that all of those people are Republicans. I'm not saying all Republicans are the haters, but all the haters are Republicans. And that's a problem. Okay. I don't know what else I can say about this. I'm heartbroken for the people of New Zealand. I'm heartbroken for the people of the world. I'm heartbroken for the people that on Friday afternoons go to mosques around the world to pray. And today they're being told not to go for fear that copycat haters, shooters, murderers might be out there somewhere wanting to repeat what was done in New Zealand last night. And in that case, the terrorists win. If people are faithful and this is what they do, they want to go to their mosque and pray. The fact that they're being told don't go today is an affront, is sickening. And I'm sorry, you can't let the fucking terrorists win. But by them having access to these guns, they've already won. Oy, oy, oy. All right. Today is a busy day. There's a lot going on. Yes, not all Republicans are racist, but all racists seem to be Republicans. Just saying. That's a bit of wisdom from your pal here. All right. There's a lot going on in the world. We'll get to what's news. There's not a whole lot happened today. After I recorded what's news this morning. And maybe it did, but everything, I'm just sort of fixated on the insanity in our world. But there is other news. So, you know what, let's start by getting Dennis Campbell on the line. Dennis Campbell, you know, our old pal who is the editor and publisher of UK Progressive Magazine, and they're at ukprogressive.co.uk. Dennis Campbell is an American expat who lives in Wales, and he's been keeping us posted. He's been keeping us up to date on all things Brexit, and this was the week that every day I tried my best to keep you updated on what was going on over there, but I thought we would check in with our friend Dennis Campbell to find out if it's as insane on the ground in the UK as it seems to be, watching, reading the coverage of what went on this week. I don't feel so bad. I don't think we're the only batshit crazy country on the planet right now.
Yeah, I actually was listening to the folks over at Morning Joe the other day.
Oh, God.
And I think it was the guy that's also on the Today Show, whose name escapes at the moment. He said, you know, isn't it nice that for once we're not the craziest place on the face of the earth?
Willie Geist.
The United States.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been a crazy week, Nicole.
Yes, I know. So there were all kinds of votes this week. A vote for a plan for Brexit, a vote to have a new referendum on Brexit, a vote, and everything failed. Right? It's so far the only thing that passed was yesterday a delay in exiting from the European Union. But I understand it's not quite that simple, is it?
Well, it's not. I mean, it's likely to pass that the 27 nations will likely grant an extension. Basically, what's going to happen, though, is that she's going to take one more crack at the bat here with this already dead Brexit agreement that she's tried to get across without success. I mean, she's literally been, I think it's three bites of this apple already that she's actually taken trying to bring this thing across the line. It's like the zombie Brexit deal that will never die. You know, you almost need to start to take out a horror film about it. Mm-hmm. But she seems to feel now that with the the first time she brought it forward, it lost by 223 votes. And then this last time, just the other evening, it lost by 149 votes. She seems confident now that she can convince the DUP, the Democratic Unionist Party in Northern Ireland, to come on side with her, which will bring another dozen or so votes. But I still don't know how she gets the extra 100 votes to sort of push the carcass of this across the line.
Right. And then doesn't the EU have to agree to the delay? And what they're saying is that they won't agree to a delay if there's no plan on how to enact Brexit, on how to facilitate this divorce.
Exactly. I mean, they've spent so much time focused on trying to find an agreement that can make its way through the British Parliament. They've completely ignored that we're but one of 27 nations, and any one of those 27 nations can turn around and say no at any point in time. The general consensus, though, is that Michel Barnier and Donald Tusk, who are the two leaders of that whole European Union group, have got the 27 in line to grant it an extension rather than allow them just to crash out, because, you know, crashing out of the world's second largest economy is not a good idea.
Right.
And, you know, it hurts them as well as us. You know, I've said all along, we're a tiny island here, and we seem to think that we're the straw that stirs the drink. Europe has pretty much knocked that out and said, no, you're not the straw that stirs the drink, and don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Yep.
If they can keep us in and somehow manage to collect our dues and keep things going, then everybody will remain reasonably happy, I think.
Well, and here's the thing. It's supposed to happen 2 weeks from today. The day.
Yes.
The date is March 29th. That's 2 weeks from today. So what's going to happen on March 29th?
Well, we're not sure. I mean, probably, first of all, there'll be another vote next week on the 21st. So we'll have something to talk about on the Three Muckrakers podcast again.
Uh-huh.
And then, we'll see where it goes. I mean, I don't know how many more weeks like the last three we can take.
Right.
Because it's just been chaotic. And as a matter of fact, we're going to be stopping our podcast at 200 episodes, which
really?
Is two away.
You are?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
We've reached a point where Brexit fatigue and Trump fatigue is just so ridiculous. We spend our entire weekend prepping a rundown that we then have to throw out because
right.
either Donald or Theresa does something stupid, and we have to start all over from scratch again. And that's not fun. What you do is much more fun.
So the Three Muckrakers is ending?
We're ending at 200. Yeah.
Wow.
Paul and I have looked at it, and we've said, you know what? 200 is a good run. And I'm going to start a interview program as yet untitled, but I'll keep you all informed. But it's just going to be one-on-one interviews where uh-huh. all I've got to do is come up with a dozen or so really good questions uh-huh. and just let people talk.
Right.
So,
I understand. I understand.
Yeah.
Well, this show has morphed over the years to what it has become, which is, you know, the first half hours is sort of a news update and my snarky yeah. commentary on said news stories. And the second half is usually an interview. So it seems to work out. Well, I wish you guys luck. I mean, watching it over here, it's just, misery loves company. So we're in it together.
Well, you know, and the funny thing is that, you know, I was listening to Maddow last night, and she was talking about, you know, this gentleman in a shocking pink tie who first showed up at Trump Tower, one of the first people ever to show up there. It turns out it's Nigel Farage, the chief instigator of Brexit to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he and Steve Bannon are working their way across the Europe 27 to try and get one, because all they need is one to stand up and say, hell, no way, no how, never are we going to allow an extension, so that Britain will end up being forced to crash out. And, people are already stockpiling medicines. They've been collecting canned goods. We're going to have 20-mile tailbacks of trucks onto the M25. It's insanity, and no one has had the decency or the strength or the ability to stand up and say, we're not going to do this anymore.
Yeah, Oh, I'm so sorry that you're going through this. You know, like I said, we're in it together. Dennis Campbell, again, find him on Twitter at ClientLoyaltyDC. UK Progressive Magazine is at ukprogressive.co.uk. And catch the Three Muckrakers podcast. Get it while you can for the next 2 weeks anyway on iTunes and wherever you get your podcast from. Dennis, thank you for keeping us up to date on what's going on. It's a mad world we're living in.
Keeps us busy, keeps us interested, that's for sure.
That it does. All right, Dennis, thank you. I guess we'll check in as we get closer to the 29th.
See you next week.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye. Thanks. Dennis Campbell, everyone. Good guy, Dennis. I don't even know what to say anymore. All right, we'll take a break. In fact, we'll do the recorded version of What's News because, again, not much has changed since I recorded it this morning, and it'll give my voice a rest. And then we'll come back after that with the wonderful Will Bunch of the Philadelphia Inquirer. There's good stuff happening today, too. Just so you know, I don't want to overshadow it, and it'll come up in What's News. But the today, tens of thousands of students all over the world are walking out of class and hitting the streets to protest government inaction on climate change. So this is one thing that that Will Bunch wrote about this week. He also wrote about the mainstream media's socialist boogeyman, and we'll get to all of that today. So stick around. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
At least 49 people were killed in Christchurch, New Zealand, after gunmen opened fire on two mosques. Dozens more are injured, many of them seriously, and the death toll is expected to rise. Three people have been arrested, one man charged with murder. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said it was a well-coordinated attack and called this one of New Zealand's darkest days. She went on to show the world how a real leader reacts to an attack based on extremist white supremacy and right-wing ideology.
We, New Zealand, we were not a target because we are a safe harbor for those who hate. We were not chosen for this act of violence because we condone racism, because we are an enclave for extremism. We were chosen for the very fact that we are none of these things, because we represent diversity, kindness, compassion, a home for those who share our values, refuge for those who need it. And those values, I can assure you, will not and cannot be shaken by this attack. We are a proud nation of more than 200 ethnicities, 160 languages. And amongst that diversity, we share common values. And the one that we place the currency on right now and tonight is our compassion and the support for the community of those directly affected by this tragedy. And secondly, the strongest possible condemnation of the ideology of the people who did this. You may have chosen us, but we utterly reject and condemn you.
An attacker reportedly live-streamed the massacre in a graphic 17-minute post on Facebook, which was soon pulled down. An 87-page manifesto believed to belong to one attacker has also emerged, filled with anti-immigrant and anti-Muslim rhetoric. The man accused of opening fire at the mosques appears to have been motivated by white supremacy and extremism that he saw in the United States. Congress is out of session, now on March recess, but there was a lot of action before they left. The Republican-controlled Senate voted Thursday 59-41 to revoke Trump's national emergency declaration on the southern border. 12 Republicans went against the president to vote with the Democrats, arguing that the end run around Congress to secure additional border wall funding was an unconstitutional power grab. That was actually the second time this week that Senate Republicans broke with Trump. On Wednesday, they passed a resolution requiring the president to withdraw U.S. troops from the Saudi-led war in Yemen unless they're fighting al-Qaeda. If the House takes up and passes that bill, it will likely result in Trump's second veto and a debate about war powers. The House got in on the action, too, by a vote of 420-0, with four Republicans voting present. The House passed a resolution declaring that special counsel Robert Mueller's final report should be made public. Lindsey Graham blocked it from getting a vote in the Senate, saying that there first needs to be a special counsel appointed to investigate, quote, the abuses potentially by the Department of Justice and the FBI regarding the Clinton email investigation. No, I'm not kidding. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross faced tough questioning Thursday from Democrats on the House Oversight Committee about whether he lied to Congress about his decision to add a citizenship question to the 2020 census. Once again, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez showed her questioning prowess.
We are now in violation of the U.S. Census Act of 1974, which requires you to submit a specific report to Congress ahead of any changes that you find necessary. This question is not a reinstatement of the 1950 question. It's a change, which means that change requires you to send a report to us while the question is proposed, not before it is decided or settled. So my question is, why are we violating the law to include this question in the 2020
point of order.
Lawmakers in the UK voted Thursday to delay the Brexit process, acknowledging a need for more time to try to break a deadlock over Britain's departure from the European Union. Members of Parliament decisively rejected putting a second referendum before voters. Prime Minister Theresa May will ask European leaders to grant an extension to the legal process now in place. Unless a delay is approved by all 27 remaining EU leaders, Britain faces a chaotic exit scenario on March 29th. Donald Trump issued a bizarre indirect warning about his supporters getting tough on his political enemies in an interview with Breitbart. Quote, you know, the left plays a tougher game. It's very funny. I actually think that the people on the right are tougher, but they don't play tougher. Okay. I can tell you, I have the support of the police, the support of the military, the support of the bikers for Trump. I have the very tough people, but they don't play it tough until they go to a certain point, and then it would be very, very bad. Seriously. Tens of thousands of students all over the globe are walking out of class Friday and hitting the streets to protest lax government action on climate change. The global climate strike is taking place in more than 100 countries. The strikes got started in Australia and New Zealand, with students marching in front of government buildings, chanting and hoisting signs that read, "Change the politics, not the climate." And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
These are the sounds of crushed souls. The sounds of despair from former radio personalities languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the Internet, but their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to re-establishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio. And you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
Okay, we are back. I am Nicole Sandler. I thank you for being here today. In just a moment, I'm sorry to do this to you. Donald Trump is going to issue his first veto of his presidency. The networks, the cable channels at least, are all carrying it live. Oh, my God, let's go to the Oval Office to hear the president speak about his decision to veto the legislation passed this week to block his declaration of a national emergency at the U.S.-Mexico border because it's not a fucking emergency. And that's why Congress voted to block it. And this miscreant, this piece of shit, is celebrating the fact that he's going to veto it. We will not carry that live. We will not carry that at all. In fact, instead, we'll talk to our friend Will Bunch. Will Bunch is the national opinion columnist at the Philadelphia Inquirer and the Philadelphia Daily News. He's not only a brilliant writer, but a prolific one as well. So there's tons to read if you go to find his archive at philly.com. Hey, Will Bunch.
Hey, Nicole, how you doing?
You know, it's a Friday and I was feeling good until I opened my eyes and saw the news out of New Zealand. And then I was horrified.
Right. Yeah, I know. It's a terrible day.
And you know what? This should hit every American really hard because we exported this. This is a direct byproduct of what's going on in America. I believe this.
Yeah, I mean, I would. I guess maybe expand on that. And I mean, I think it just shows the global nature of the problem because, you know, I mean, you want to talk about open borders. I mean, when it comes to hatred, there are open borders. I mean, I was interested to the extent that, this depraved killer, was just very conversant in talking about politics, just the way we talk about politics in the United States.
Yep. And he alluded to Donald Trump, said, I didn't pull his quote because I don't want to quote this murderer. But basically,
and he didn't say it was all about Trump, but the fact that he even mentioned Trump and had praise for Trump's general philosophy is alarming. It's very alarming.
Really alarming.
I mean, he also, it's interesting that, I mean, he also seemed conversant in other aspects of our kind of crazed bubble. I think he made a reference to Candace Owens, the right wing pundit at some point.
Oh, really?
He also made a bizarre comment, which is that he used a gun to commit this massacre because he wanted to generate more debate about the Second Amendment in the United States.
Oh, my God.
I mean, for an Australian is. So that's what I mean. I mean, it's Trump, but it's also more than Trump, you know, in the sense that it's just this toxic stew of, you know, white nationalism and anti-immigrant fervor that, you know, unfortunately we're seeing in a lot of places, right? I mean, we're seeing it in Europe. Here's a guy in Australia.
Yep.
He's committing a crime from Australia. He's committing
in
a crime
Zealand.
In New Zealand.
Yep.
So, you know, with the internet and, you know, the internet was so critical for expanding this guy's hatred that, there's no national barriers when it comes to YouTube or 4chan, whatever the heck that is. I still have no idea, but Facebook Live. I mean, he was in Twitter. He was on all these things.
Yeah. So. 8chan and Reddit. I mean, this was his thing to put it out over the, all over these social media channels. Sickening. I know his manifesto is out there somewhere. I'm not going to read it. I don't want to, I will not say the guy's name, but it's important to know exactly where he was coming from. And he was coming from here. He was coming from the mind of Donald Trump. He was coming from the ideology and the white supremacy that we saw on display in Charlottesville. I mean, this is a sickness that was exported from the United States, from the right wing of the United States of America. And, that can't be said often enough.
Something along those lines that was kind of fascinating. It was just kind of a coincidence, but a remarkable coincidence, is just this morning, the New York Times actually published a story about, of all things, a special state legislature election up in northeastern Pennsylvania. I mean, we didn't actually even really cover the race in the Philadelphia Inquirer, so I didn't know that much about it. But apparently, it just happened on Tuesday, and the good news is the Democrat won, so that's the good news. I mean, but the Republican who lost and made a race out of it was just a hardcore Trumpist who, you know, had hateful Facebook postings himself, you know, about Islam and other things. And the article in the Times talked chapter and verse to, and he was mayor of a town in this district. So the Times reporter spoke chapter and verse to different voters in this town who loved their mayor, and they were all saying things about how the white race is going to be replaced. And I mean, it was just very, very open kind of white nationalist talk from this guy's supporters. And, you know, when I say coincidence, I mean, the Times published this story this morning with no idea what was going to happen halfway around the world in New Zealand.
Right.
Just happened to be a coincidence that they're publishing this story where just everyday voters in the United States are really kind of spouting nonsense that's not too different from what a crazed killer of 49 people was putting into his manifesto.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, I mean, one thing, you know, and you know, I've just seen summaries of the manifesto. I haven't read it. I mean, mm-hmm. like yourself, I mean, it's a challenge. I think we need to understand why this is happening, which means that, you know, people in the media being Latin for in the middle, right, we're the interpreters of kind of raw facts for the public. I mean, I think people in the media need to take a look at his manifesto and only to the very limited extent necessary. And it's not necessary for my purposes, but I
exactly.
guess the video, you know, I mean, I think that's only for the handful of, you know, hardcore news reporters.
Exactly.
The journalists who need to
read it,
yeah,
to cover the story should read it so that the rest of us don't have to. It's the same way that I watch, you know, the mainstream cable channels so my listeners don't have to. Hopefully I pull the stuff that's of interest to them and they don't have listen to the bullshit on MSNBC. And in fact, this is a good time to segue into your latest column, Will Bunch. It was published yesterday at philly.com. Stop Joe McCarthying the socialist boogeyman and fix America's broken capitalism. It is a great column. And you start off by talking about how last week, John Hickenlooper, the governor of Colorado, who's now running for president, was on Morning Joe, and Joe Scarborough just kept berating him. Are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? Oh, no. Are you a capitalist? Will you embrace capitalism?
I mean,
he asked him no less than three times when he was twisting in the wind, trying not to say I'm a proud capitalist, but he wouldn't say he's a socialist. But, oh, my God, this show has vilified democratic socialism to the point where the Donnie Douche guy who they have on, I don't know why he's on a news program. He's a PR guy, I believe.
He's the worst of capitalism.
Horrible.
Capitalism has to offer.
Horrible.
He's a
trust fund baby, like the rest of them, like Donald Trump, who inherited his fortune from his father. Yeah, he never earned a dime himself. But he's like, I'd vote for Donald Trump again over a socialist. And he purports to be a
socialist might put in the death tax that would have taken away the only value he has in life.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's amazing because I grew up not that long after McCarthyism and the House Un-American Activities Committee, and you know, I've seen a gazillion either documentaries or Hollywood movies about the Blacklist, and we've all seen, you know, Trumbo and movies like that. And I was just floored to the extent that this, you know, in 2019 on Morning Joe, this browbeating of somebody to admit that he is a capitalist just reminded me so much of the House Un-American Affairs Committee, UAC. I mean, it was unbelievable. And, you know, and not only to say that he's a capitalist, but he had to say that he was a proud capitalist.
Or, yes.
Yeah. Not, you know, and like, look, I mean, you know, we're all, you know, I personally believe in, I guess what you would call a hybrid of capitalism and socialism. I want the next Steve Jobs to be able to invent the iPod and all of that. But I also think that certain things like healthcare and a college education are fundamental rights. So
and Bernie Sanders and AOC, I believe, and others, Pramila Jayapal, who's a Democratic Socialist, all stress the democratic part. They're not talking about socialism. They're talking about democratic socialism. And
I mean, it's
the way to go.
I mean, the thing that they're trying to whip up a definition of socialist that somebody's out there trying to nationalize. Somebody wants to, you know, nationalize Apple and General Electric and
right.
And,
although and you know, nationalizing the oil companies and the electric companies, I'm advocating for that. I think we should nationalize utilities, energy. Certain things should be nationalized. The oil companies should be nationalized. But hey, that's just me.
Yeah, I was just listening to a podcast today, and they were talking about how well it worked out for Mexico, and I'm thinking, yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean. Sure. Some of those things are debate we should be having, but the reality is whatever lies in our future down the road, right now in the 2020 race, there's no candidate who is that kind of socialist on the, you know, on the kind of socialist communist border where they want to, you know, to take over all the companies, or they want to privatize all of our companies, or they want everybody to have the same income, or, you know, from each according to their ability and to each according to their need. Nobody out there is advocating for that. What people are advocating for are the things that a majority of the American people support, such as universal health care.
Yes.
Such as affordable college, including free college options for those, and Felicity Huffman can still send her daughter to a private university if she wants.
But, yes, she can.
You know, for people, yeah, but people who want a college education, I mean, that's very important, you know, that, you know, and just a better education system, obviously, or teaching people skills or, you know, community colleges or whatever, but an education system that makes sense, that doesn't saddle people with $1.5 trillion in debt like the current system that we have has done. I mean, if you want to call those things socialism, first of all, I think you'd be wrong, number mm-hmm. one. And second of all, you know, that what we should be arguing about on shows like Morning Joe is, why is the system now so messed up? You know, why is the Daily Beast publishing a story of 189 911 calls from workers in Amazon warehouses who are threatening to kill themselves?
That is frightening. Yeah. And that's the story. Look, we've all heard about the evil Amazon, and but maybe don't understand what's so evil about them. But what you tell about, you talk about this recent Daily Beast expose on the 189 phone calls to 911 from Amazon's massive warehouses, slammed frequently as brutally and physically punishing work in overheated, soulless, windowless boxes, about employees threatening to kill themselves. You continued, or when reading how one former Amazon worker told Vox, you spend 10 hours on foot, there's no windows in the place, and you're not allowed to talk to people. There's no interactions allowed. I got a sense in no time at all that they work people to death or until they get too tired to keep working. That's what Amazon is about. I mean, that's ugly capitalism at its ugliest.
Right. So, I mean, how could you know about situations like that and then go on national TV and say that you're a proud capitalist? I mean, I have a lot of respect for someone like Elizabeth Warren, who says, I'm a capitalist, mm-hmm. you know, but this, you know, the system is corrupt. It's rigged. It's broken. I mean, that's probably a little bit to the center right of where you are, Nicole. But mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's a much more legitimate answer to that question than saying that you're a proud capitalist.
Right.
I mean,
I think
what Elizabeth Warren is saying is the minimum, right?
To
say, all right, I'm a capitalist, but capitalism as we're practicing it right now is terrible. You know,
it's broken. It's a broken system that rewards the already wealthy and doesn't provide any avenue for the not wealthy to get wealthy.
We had a capitalist system in this country in the 1950s, right after World War II, right? Uh-huh. I don't want to hold it up as nirvana, because there were problems. You know, there was racial discrimination, there was discrimination against women in the workplace, and all of those things. But some of the things that were positives from that era, we had strong unions, and study after study after study has shown that strong unions could have done something to alleviate this income inequality that we see now.
Mm.
So you had that. You had good public schools where people, you know, I mean, you look at the people who came out of public schools just from one area, Brooklyn, New York, in the 1950s, you know, You know, Bernie Sanders, Barbara Streisand, Carol King, you know, Chuck Schumer, you know, you just go down.
Howie Klein.
Well, maybe we'll give him back, but you know.
They can have Chuck Schumer. They can keep him.
But you know, just teaching from public schools. So, I mean, so you had that and you had CEOs who, you know, were making maybe 20 times what their workers were making instead of making 350 or 500 times what their workers were making. It was just a better system. If we can go back to that kind of capitalism where we had strong unions and regulations, and maybe we could be proud capitalists again, but not with this mess.
And the other point that you make in this piece is that this is the big smear that Donald Trump and his acolytes are using against all the Democrats. It doesn't matter if they are Bernie Sanders, an actual Democratic socialist, or Elizabeth Warren, who still considers herself a capitalist. Here's a paragraph from your piece. You wrote, that is the new McCarthyism, using the boogeyman shouts of socialism to target baby boomers raised in an era when socialism was a shocking taboo, and to slime candidates without having to discuss equitable things like universal health care or college affordability. Their cries and their related claim that any policy that might help the middle class will turn America into a collapsed Venezuela and not into successful social democracies like in Scandinavia, barely mask their desperation to change the topic. It threatens to taint the 2020 race so badly that 2016's ugly contest will soon be recalled as an exercise in civility in comparison. Oh my God.
I think that's going to happen. It's going to be terrible. Meant to in the, you know, there's always one or two things that you mean to put in your columns that you remember after you filed that you forgot to put in. But I mean I would call this the pink scare. You know, it's not the red scare, because that was communism. It's socialism. So I guess it's the pink scare. It's not quite as over the top as flat out communism. But I mean, it's basically the same general principle, and it's definitely the new McCarthyism, you know, and we're going to hear it because, you know, the only path to victory for Donald Trump is convincing, you know, that same sliver of voters who put him over the top in 2016 that the alternative is worse. You know, in 2016, he used misogyny and the fact that there were enough voters out there that if you just kept hitting the misogyny button enough, they'd say, yeah, you know what? I can't bear 4 years of Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And there were enough people out there like that, particularly in those three states, Pennsylvania, my state, and Michigan and Wisconsin, you know, to get him over the top doing that. So, you know, he's hoping now to be able to do that, by scaring those same voters that, hey, you might not like the way I talk on Twitter, and, you know, I might be crude and whatever, but I'm not a socialist. You know, that's going to be, and he's going to scream, you know, and, you know, even if, and I'm not predicting this or thinking it's likely, but even if the Democratic nominee ends up being, you know, Joe Biden, who's been around forever.
Please,
and
no.
You know, who, yeah, right. I mean, but, you know, Joe Biden is somebody who was a successful politician in the era when it was a dirty word to be called a liberal. Just forget socialist.
Sure.
Right? You know?
Yep.
Or, you know, take the most center right kind of plausible candidates, like Amy Klobuchar is the one that comes to mind.
Yep.
And we'll see if he actually comes up with any policy positions on the campaign trail. But I guess Beto O'Rourke is kind of towards the center. So,
yep.
You know,
yes,
if the nominee ends up being one of those three people, they're still going to be called a socialist.
You're
it doesn't matter. You
right.
know,
because that's the smear du jour this year.
Yeah. I mean, Amy Klobuchar, who, you know, is arguably the most moderate of the candidates who has more than 1 or 2% in the polls, is going to be called a socialist just as much as Bernie Sanders would be called a socialist.
No, you're absolutely right.
Because that's their playbook. That's what we're going to be seeing. We are seeing it. I mean, it's starting now big time, and you know, they don't stop. I had the TV on this morning when I was doing some other things, and I don't know if it was Beto or whatever, but they're, you know, and it's every channel. It's, you know,
yeah,
I
it's
mean,
all of them.
Fox, of course, but it's also MSNBC and CNN,
that's
all
right.
the channels.
Yep.
just keep hammering this, you know, it's the only,
it's constant.
It's the only question.
It's constant.
The and they find interesting.
And they're I don't know if you're still, you know, wanting Bernie to not be in the race, but the way they diss Bernie Sanders is just so predictable. They discount his success because he is leading in the polls of all declared candidates right now. The only one who polls higher than him is Joe Biden, and Joe Biden is not in the race yet. But they will not say Bernie Sanders is the front runner. They just won't go there. They won't give it to him. Rachel Maddow, who prides herself on having all the candidates on, of course, has had all of them on virtually, except for Bernie Sanders. They are so biased against him. It's so apparent. Their bias is just so clear. That's why I say
I watch it so the listeners don't have to. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I guess it was the weekend or maybe the next week or the second weekend after he announced, you know, Bernie went out to Iowa and everywhere he's gone, his crowds have been
huge.
Just as big,
huge.
Just as big and just as enthusiastic, you know, you could give, you know, in 2016, you could say, oh, it's just a curiosity factor. I mean, there's only two people running and people want to hear what he has to say and he's something different and blah, blah, blah. Well, you can't use that as an excuse now. I mean, now people know who Bernie Sanders is.
That's right.
And he's still getting big crowds.
And he's the front runner, and he's raising amazing amounts of money. In fact, the one thing we haven't heard yet is, you know, with all the and the way they're touting Beto O'Rourke, it's like, oh my God, give it a rest already. I'm wondering on his announcement day who pulled in more money, and I have to think Bernie Sanders probably outraised Beto O'Rourke, but I don't know because it hasn't been reported yet.
Yeah, no, I was just reading something online just like an hour ago that said they're. You know, the Beto isn't doing that. He's not putting out a number of what he raised online because, you know, obviously it pales in comparison. But, I mean, honestly, who's going to be inspired? I mean, I can't say I watched it in detail. And obviously I'd want to sit down and watch his entire shtick or, you know, I'm sure CNN's racing to put together the Beto town hall.
Oh, of course they are.
So we'll see him for a whole hour soon enough. And I'll definitely want to watch that because, right now, I'm just hearing nothing from him, and I like him. I would love to have a beer with Beto.
Yeah, he seems like a nice guy.
Seems like a great guy.
But he's not ready to be president. He should have run against John Cornyn for Senate.
Right. I know. I mean, it's complicated though, right? Because I mean, if he, let's say somehow, you know, his charisma sweeps him to the nomination, and he's the candidate against Donald Trump, of course, he'd be 50 times better, you know, or you can't even do the math because you can't multiply zero, right? But I mean, he would be so many times better a president than Donald Trump. You know,
well,
he'd bring in some
saying.
Really good people.
Right.
He'd be listening. Hopefully, he'd be listening to us, and he'd be listening to the Democrats in Congress, who you know, the younger ones, they're really impressive ones, and you know, he would do some good things. He'd get us back into Paris Climate Accords, and you know. Stop this border nonsense and all of those things. But that's in the future. I mean, right now he's running against literally 20, you know, whatever, 17 or 18 other Democrats. And some of them, you know, I have to say, Bernie's got his record on issues and it's impressive. I mean, I think in terms of actual legislation and coming up with new ideas and really pitching them in his campaign, the candidate is impressing me the most is Elizabeth Warren. You know,
I love Elizabeth Warren, and it's really sad that she's introduced all these great policy ideas, and she gets nothing in the press. And Beto O'Rourke says, "I'm running," and it's wall to wall coverage. Elizabeth Warren is the real deal. Again, I mean, I'm torn. You know, choices right now, it's Bernie and Elizabeth Warren. Those are my top two.
Right. Sure.
And
well, if you want radical change in this country, if you think you need to do more than just tinker around the edges, and, you know, from a progressive point of view, those are the two candidates right now. And, you know, the way things are going, maybe that, you know, there could be one or two more on the far progressive side. I mean, that would be interesting. I'd like to see that actually. You know, who knows? Maybe there'll be 25 or 30 candidates. Who knows?
We'll see. Hey, Will Bunch, before we run out of time, I do want to mention a column that you wrote earlier in the week has a local spin on it, talking about school kids in Philadelphia who are striking today because the grown-ups have failed them on climate. So you did the local angle there in Philly, but all over the world today, students, kids have walked out of school and are protesting their government's inaction on climate change. And as much as, again, the corporate media and Joe Scarborough wants to poo-poo the Green New Deal, the fact of the matter is if we don't do something really drastic within the next 10 years or so, or 12, if you listen to the experts, this world is going to be extremely uninhabitable.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. And, you know, I would just also say to anybody out there who's listening, any chance you have today to amplify, you know, to use whatever platform you have to amplify the message of these kids. I mean, I've been trying to do that. I mean, I've been, you know, clicking on the hashtag every hour and trying to find, you know, whether it's marches in Berlin or Sydney, Australia or wherever, or, you know, in my hometown, Philadelphia. I'm trying to amplify the voices of these kids because, you know, to me, that they're spot on.
They are.
It's their future. I mean, they're the ones going to have to be dealing with this for the next, you know, say, you know, of course, by the time they get up there, the lifespan is going to be 120. So they're dealing with this for the next 105 years, right? You know, so, I think we should give them the support. And, you know, I mean, you know, I know you don't have a lot of time and I don't want to go off the deep end with that whole Dianne Feinstein thing a couple of weeks ago.
No, but
I just heard a lot of, like, you know, grown up, unquote, Democratic partisans who were poo-pooing this kid. And now, don't they realize how great Dianne Feinstein is?
Oh, God.
And I have to say, among other things, I mean, I think what people are ignorant of history, you know. I'm kind of a fanatic about 1960 civil rights history, and you look at what happened in Birmingham in 1963. That movement would have failed were it not for high school and middle school aged kids, because when grown ups who admittedly had a lot to lose, I mean their jobs and things were on the line, and the kids were the ones who ultimately stepped up and saved Martin Luther King's marches in Birmingham.
Hmm.
They were the ones who filled the jails. Just for all the listeners out there, Google the Birmingham Children's Crusade, 1963. It's an amazing story. I mean, you've probably seen the pictures of protesters having police dogs sicked out, jumping on them, or protesters against the wall having fire hoses squirting on them. You have to understand those were 15 and 16 year old kids.
Wow.
I think the kid in the person in the famous dog police dog picture, who's got the two police dogs jumping on him, was a 17-year-old high school senior, or junior maybe. But that's who provided the leadership, you know. And you look at so many issues, you know, from that time when, you know, Vietnam, and then you look to today, and you look at last year that, you know, the March for Our Lives, you know, moved the ball on gun safety in a way that, again, we grown-ups have kind of, you know, we're kind of stuck on the 50-yard line, and they picked up the ball, and you know, we're not nearly to where we need to be on guns, but they at least kind of gave momentum to a movement that was totally dead in the water. You know, so you know, do not dismiss the children. I mean, not only do they deserve a future, but they have a lot of courage to fight for their future, and they're smarter than they give them credit for. And what they're doing today on climate is just amazing.
Yeah. And the fact is, I can't imagine being a kid today. The thought scares the shit out of me. And in fact, so one of these idiots gave Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez a hard time for saying something along the lines of, you know, the climate change, the climate disaster that's happening to us is making some people question whether or not to have children. That is absolutely a thing. And I've been saying it for a long time. When I see somebody pregnant or hear someone just had a baby, my first thought is, oh my God, I can't imagine what life is going to be like for this child 20 years from now. I would never, if I was a young woman, I would never have a kid right now. I mean, I adopted my daughter as it is. But bringing a child into the world today, I think, is the height of irresponsibility because of what we're facing. And these kids see it because it's their future. I'll be dead before too long, but they have to live with this. So,
right, absolutely. You know, and so I said, so like I said, just let's amplify these kids today because they're doing something really great.
Most definitely, and it's nice to be able to leave the week on a high note, saluting the kids for taking control of their future and doing what they can to try to save the planet for them. For their future children. Anyway, Will Bunch, find him at philly.com, on the Twitters at @Will_Bunch, and occasionally here on the show. I always love talking to you, love reading your column, Will. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Nicole, for having me on. I really appreciate it. You have a great weekend.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
And I'll see you Tuesday. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. Stay safe. Bye.